five, four, three, two.
Welcome back into the Radcast, everybody. This is so as you've seen by the episode title, we're getting into a big month, and yeah. this is
big for, very big for us.
Very big for us. This is, I don't know. It's there's kind of been more weight to this one.
Yeah.
Because throughout the 4 years that we've done this show. Whether mm-hmm. you know we did it consecutively or took a break with Sucktastic, We obviously put a lot of care into our episodes.
Yeah.
A lot of episodes we do a lot of research for a lot of episodes. There's just something about Mighty Morphin May here that just has this air of great importance to us to really want to get right.
From a very young age, the introduction of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, very first thing that I can remember like resonating with me and starting this whole interest in superheroes and that sort and just heroes in general, and then the themes of it, and then in a way kind of started us on this trajectory.
Yeah.
So it's very, very important in our life.
There's this year, definitely. I mean, I like to think back, you know, 1994, being 3 years old, being conscientious of things around us. Definitely 1995, we always credit as the beginning of nostalgia for us, kind of experiencing what we would later have, some may consider rose-colored glasses for.
Yes.
But either way, so many things converged there, and it's in no small part thanks to Fox Kids.
Oh,
because our love for X-Men started with the animated show,
Batman
the Animated Series. Also with that was Batman Forever. Also that Spider-Man the Animated Series. And all of the things that were shown on Fox Kids, whether it was in the morning or the afternoon, those blocks were packed.
Yep.
And the show on the Fox Kids network, especially for its first two seasons, was the show we will be highlighting in the next few weeks here.
Yeah.
The reason for Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Which supposed to say that in unison, right?
No. but it celebrates its 30th anniversary this year. August 28th, 1993 was the airing of its first episode, Day of the Dumpster.
Yep.
And what we're about to embark on, we want to make our greatest work yet. And that's
how it certainly feels. Felt in preparation. I was like, what is this like? This additional level of importance that I'm feeling, like, because with this is the most I've prepared for any episode of any podcast that we've ever done. And I'm like, why, like, what is this feeling of like, this is our greatest work? I'm like, why am I getting this feeling of like you said, a higher level of importance than any other episode? And when we framed it that way, I was like, oh, there's this internal feeling of like, this is what kind of started it all for us.
Yeah.
So we got to get it right.
Yeah. And of course, and I know those of you listening, our friends and family who have been on the show, you know that we're not discrediting any of your appearances
of course
or anything we've ever
talked with you.
Like I said, we take great pride in all of the shows that most of the shows that we've done. There's some with just you and I, nothing with guests, but just you and
really
I that
revisit,
I don't want to revisit. But something like this, it just feels like, damn it, we got to get this right.
Yeah, we got to nail it.
Because it was like we had said, it's the catalyst for everything. So we are about to embark on Mighty Morphin May. I know I said welcome to the Radcast, but I'm Steven.
I'm Mighty Morphin Matt.
Yeah, there you go. And if you're first joining us, if this is the first time you've ever listened to the Radcast and you saw we're talking Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, you know, right getting close to the 30th anniversary, they're the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Once and Always, the Netflix special just came out. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hopefully you enjoy this. Hopefully you take some time to listen to our other 120 episodes before this, and you stay tuned for our next coming weeks when we talk about seasons 2, 3, and then have a ramble with a couple of friends talking about their experience with Power Rangers. So welcome. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you for joining us. And you also, if you're just tuning in, you don't have any history with our old theme song that we've been using for 4 years. Those of you listening and you know us, you've been listening for a while, you noticed something a little different.
It's not
the first time we've had a different theme song. Depending sometimes on the subject matter, we'll veer off and do something different for the theme. This one's here to stay. Our lovely and talented dear friend and former and future guest, David Greshamport. We approached him a few months ago and asked if he wouldn't mind writing a new theme for us. He is an incredibly talented musician. And he has been hard at work for a long time working on it. He put so much love and care into that theme song you just heard. And we are so proud of it.
Absolutely.
He was like, it's yours now, gentlemen. And we are so proud to have it.
Just the times he would show us different drafts of it, and we'd offer our input and stuff, and it's just an opportunity. He's a busy dad of two, him and his wife both, and he just giving him a chance to give him a creative outlet, a chance to pick up the guitar again, and he did all the instrumentation for it, and just give him a chance to do some musically again. We're glad we could offer that chance, and he really, really delivered. Really proud of it.
So hopefully you all like it, and I mean, we like it. We like it a lot. But another thing that we liked a lot, no more dilly-dallying. Let's start Mighty Morphin May when we give a little retrospective on season one. So I'll say who's in the show as a whole, and then we'll give a little history.
Do a little history. There's some very key story arcs in this season. It'll be very high level. We're not going to get too granular with episodes and stuff like that, but we are going to give a history, what to expect from season one of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
And over the course of this episode or any of our episodes, if you're curious about our thoughts on specific episodes, facts about specific episodes, you know, Matt and I have been kicking around the idea of in 2024 doing a Power Rangers rewatch podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll see how we feel when 2024 comes around.
Oh, yes.
Definitely revisiting the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
It's been so fun.
It's been such a delight. I've texted Matt multiple times being like, you know, you could easily get burnt out doing this. And there have been days where I'm like, I just got home from work. I really not in the mood to sit down and watch 4 episodes of Power Rangers.
Yeah.
Not for any reason other than like,
I've been watching Power Rangers the past 2 weeks.
Or it feels like it's an assignment. But as soon as I start it, after the first episode, I'm like, damn it. Ugh, I just love this show.
It's so fun. It's so charming. It knows what it is. And we'll get into it.
So Mighty Morphin Power Rangers season one starts out with this cast. So starring Austin St. John as Jason Lee Scott, Walter Emmanuel Jones as Zach Taylor, Amy Jo Johnson as Kimberly Hart, Tui Trang as Trini Kwan, David Yost as Billy Cranston, Paul Schreier and Jason Narvi as Bulk and Skull, respectively, David Fielding as Zordon, the face of Zordon, Bob Manahan as the voice of Zordon for most of the episodes, Richard Steven Horvitz as the voice of Alpha 5. He's also the voice of Zim,
Invader Zim. And ton of Billy and Mandy.
Ton of other voice credits. Richard Gianelli as Ernie. And later in the season, the late Jason David Frank as Tommy Oliver. And we'll kind of get into like how it's just been so surreal. Because Tui Trang, unfortunately, has not been with us since 2001. But it's just extra fresh. The wound is still kind of fresh with Jason David Frank being gone. The villains, Barbara Goodson is the voice of Rita Repulsa. Kerrigan Mahan is the voice of Goldar.
Goldar.
Mm-hmm. Richard Axelrod as the voice of Fenster.
I'm Terry Bruce Hiplow.
You Tim and Eric fans out there, especially, check it out. Dr. Steve Brule's Terry Bruce Hiplow. That was so weird.
I know.
Finding that out.
You watch it and you look it up and he's like, oh, shit. Well, first, it's like he played Lord Zedd's voice.
Well, yeah, in season two.
Uh-huh. And then Fenster. And so you're like, that's so wild.
Yeah, David Malow as Babu. Michael Sorich as Squat. And later on, Wendy Lee as Scorpina.
Mm-hmm.
Mighty Morphin Power Rangers aired its first season on Fox Kids between August 29th, 1993, and May 23rd, 1994. 60 freaking episodes.
Crazy.
And people, children mainly, ate it up,
which is why a lot of the criticism that's levied against this show, it's easy to watch it as grown-ups, and oh god, this acting is terrible, like these stories don't make sense, like it's just very over exaggerated and stuff like that. But you have to, because I did that rewatching it, even though I still love it, it was very easy for me to be critical. But then you have to put yourself in the mindset of a 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old kid. You're not thinking critically about it. You're not poking holes. You just have the action that's in front of you. And you have these characters, these relatable teenagers who you want to aspire to be, who you look up to as role models. And you just see them being friends and saving the day. And that is more than enough. And this, especially season one, has plenty of that.
And just at a surface level, the appeal, especially for little kids, and you know, kids in the older adolescent age, when this comes out, you have superheroes, you have live action anime, you have the teen melodrama, or even just like a Saved by the Bell. I think Jason Narvi, like who plays Skull, kind of compared, it's a combination of all those things.
It's like sci-fi mixed with Saved by the Bell kind of thing.
And of course, it came about at the right time.
The exact right time.
Because I know for the informed, for those of you informed on kind of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and if you look at it and you don't know the history, you can kind of tell it's adapted from a Japanese superhero team-up show. The Super Sentai, which had been going since the late 70s. We'll get a little more into that here. But I do want to give a little bit of history that maybe not a lot of people know about. And that's kind of its ties to Marvel. So just a little bit. So this is all information, taking notes from the Netflix series, The Toys That Made Us. They did an episode, their second episode of their first season was Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Toys. And they spent about 10, 15 minutes really giving a history lesson of like not just the Super Sentai show that led to Power Rangers, that led to the phenomenon, but really
Sentai in general.
And then also just the advances that Japan made with movies and special effects.
And you'll probably Sentai, for anyone who does, it's Japanese for squadron, task force, division, group, wing, stuff like that.
So this is, I'm just gonna read some of my notes here. And I may be all over the place. I just was kind of pausing and writing stuff down. And also, I know in the past there have been several episodes where Matt has been like, you know, I'm trying to read this here, but I can't read my chicken scratch because he writes it down. I never write things down anymore. I put it all in the notes in my phone. But I had to write all this down.
And you mentioned The Toys That Made Us. We also got a lot of information from different YouTube channels, like The Sixth Ranger, which is a really good YouTube channel. And I have the entire Boom Studios.
Shout Factory.
Shout Factory put out the entire series. I have the entire series on DVD, and there's like a like a DVD extras to where it has like a sort of mini documentary explaining the history of the show.
Which both, it's in two parts on YouTube as well. I also want to give a shout out to Toy Galaxy. And they're this won't be the last time we do extensive research on certain aspects of the show, so I'm sure we'll give shout outs. But we have a lot of sources for this. Of course, Wikipedia, Ranger Wiki. Like Matt
Ranger
said,
Wiki, it was invaluable.
Is invaluable. and IMDb. Yep. And like Matt said, we did a lot of research here.
Yeah.
So pretty much, Japan, starting really back in the 50s with Godzilla, employed something called tokusatsu,
mm-hmm.
which is essentially media, live action movies and television that employ heavy use of special effects.
Yeah, yeah.
And they did that with Godzilla,
yeah.
and with the Godzilla movies and with a lot of their television. And Toei Studios were kind of the ones who did that in Japan.
Yeah.
They were like the godfathers of a lot of that. So in the 70s, they created a character called Kamen Rider. And it's the first Henshin hero. So Henshin is Japanese for morphing.
Right.
So Toei wanted to get with a toy producing partner, enter Bandai Japan.
Yeah, and
so,
Toei, it helps Toei sounds like toy.
Yeah, exactly. Toei, toy. And also, for those of you, you know, recognize the name Bandai,
oh, yeah.
they would branch out into America.
Sidewalk chalk, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Famous for sidewalk chalk. And Bandai made all the great Japanese super like robot toys mm-hmm. called mechas.
Yep.
And they're weaponized. They look like samurai warriors, die-cast metal, this intricate, yeah. you know, some would consider pieces of art.
Yeah. So really setting the stage for mm-hmm. the explosion of what was to come in the 90s.
Oh, yeah. And so Kamen Rider, the Henshin belt, so he would use a belt to morph,
yeah.
became a hugely popular toy seller.
Mm-hmm.
So at the urging of Toei and the creator of Kamen Rider, took that concept and came up with a hero team, the Sentai.
Mm-hmm.
Now, originally they didn't have like Zords or consider Zords for us,
yeah.
but these robots.
But they were in colorful outfits.
Yeah. So Toei and Bandai in Japan, they dominated. So America entered the fray, and here's where Marvel comes into
yeah,
play.
Yeah.
Marvel partnered with Toei to kind of like borrow each other's intellectual properties in a
yeah.
way, which gave birth to Japanese Spider-Man.
Yep.
Japanese Spider-Man, he would summon a rocket. There was like, mm-hmm. Pardon my ignorance on Japanese Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I watched Toy Galaxy's videos really well. It's informative.
Yeah.
But it's not the Peter Parker Spider-Man. It's kind of,
yeah.
it's different.
It's their own.
It's an alternate
yeah.
universe Spider-Man. But essentially he summons the power, whenever has his back against the wall, he summons the power of a rocket, which turns into a robot.
Yeah.
And he would take control of this robot.
Yeah.
And it created toy opportunities for Toei and Bandai.
Yeah.
So because of that, they reworked the Sentai series to where now it become the Super Sentai
yeah.
team, and they on the team themselves would call upon big robots, and
yep.
then it all become this big mecha robot,
mm-hmm.
Thus creating Super Sentai, which would lead to, of course, what Power Rangers, the footage they would use there.
Oh, yeah.
Now, real quick, I'd like to, before we go any further with like Toei and Bandai and how they branched out into America, real quick, Marvel's connection, which leads to Haim Saban's connection with
right.
Marvel. So in the late 70s, Marvel agreed to, like I said, a three-year deal with Toei Company for each group to have access to each other's properties. Stan Lee loved the idea of live-action superhero team shows that Toei was producing.
Yeah.
He wanted to find a network in the States that would run them. And how he wanted to do it was a concept that would see the footage of the Sentai series My Son Vulcan, dub them into English, reshoot the out-of-costume stuff in America,
yeah.
and put out a show that would have seemingly been easier to produce with the episodes essentially being 30% done.
Yeah.
So sounds familiar.
Stan Lee came up with the concept of Power Rangers before
yeah.
it really...
In a roundabout way,
yeah,
for sure.
Before it was really accepted. At the time, obviously,
yeah.
they're like, you're crazy,
yeah.
we're not going to do that.
His boss, Margaret Loesch...
Lash.
Margaret Lash?
Yeah, it's pronounced Lash.
I heard Lash and Loesch.
It's Lash. I think Stan
okay.
Lee even said
okay,
Lash.
Okay, Margaret Lash. At Marvel,
yeah.
She was his boss, and she really liked the idea. So the timing wasn't right. Like, they shopped the concept around and had no takers. And then
yeah.
a few years later, while in Japan... Haim Saban,
who is a composer for
yeah.
cartoons,
uh-huh. like a lot, like Inspector Gadget,
one of He-Man,
Masters of the Universe with
yeah.
Shuki Levy.
Yeah.
So he was in Japan, and he happened upon the Sentai series Chodenshi Bioman.
Yeah.
And also pardon any of the mispronunciations.
Yeah, yeah.
We're
trying.
Yeah. Saban seen its potential in being a moneymaker in the States. He received the rights from Toei to shoot a pilot, essentially doing what Stan Lee wanted to do.
Oh, yeah.
Like Lee, Saban shopped it around for years, but TV executives had no faith in the success of English dubs of a lot of, not just Japanese television, yeah, but just television properties at that time. But in 1992, Saban brought it to the executive of Fox Kids, Margaret Lash, and Stan Lee's former boss at Marvel, and she was like, Stan Lee and I were doing this years ago.
They didn't know each other.
No, it was just happenstance.
And Margaret Lash, like, it's probably the first time she's been in, like, it's probably the first time she's seen it since the 70s. She's like, I've seen this before.
Yeah.
He's like, really? It's like, yeah, I love it. I loved it. It's so fun. That's the thing, is Stan Lee and Margaret Lash both are like, this is fun.
Yeah.
Like, it's silly and it's goofy, but like, this is really fun.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's crazy, like the happenstance that occurred in that scenario.
Yeah.
And really, it's a genius idea. Like, because the most expensive shots are action shots.
Yeah.
Like, filming any sort of action, explosions, you know, any sort of budget that goes into monsters and robots was already done.
Yeah.
So really, they just had to take that footage and then film stuff with the actual actors, and then you intersplice it, which they would eventually do. So proceed.
Yes, no, but you're right, though. I mean, it's one of those things sort of like Stan Lee saw, oh, you know, production costs can remain relatively low if we're going to make this episodic, because a lot of the footage is there.
Yep.
You know, we have footage that we can use. There's a lot of stuff that we can build stories around. Yep. Essentially the same idea, kind of the parallel thinking between Stan Lee, Margaret Lash, and Haim Saban.
Yeah.
But back to like Bandai and Toei, as a response to slipping sales figures in Japan in the early 80s, Bandai branched out and opened up Bandai America. The purpose, of course, to release popular Japanese toys in America. So 1982, the Godaiken line of robots, which were essentially all the robots from the Sentai series in Japan, were released, and it was like a greatest hits of what already had been popular in Japan. And it's all exact reproductions of Japanese lines. The Godaiken didn't fare well because there wasn't any American context.
Right.
They looked vastly different from what American audiences knew a robot to be, you know, from B-science fiction movies, Lost in Space, The Jetsons.
Yeah.
And America didn't have a television show to familiarize consumers, so that line didn't sell well. But then the next year,
you get Transformers.
Japanese representations of robots didn't catch fire until Transformers. The Godaikens were also super expensive. I think like $60. And that's $60 in early
80s money. The actual toys. Yeah.
Yeah. So Saban bought the toy rights and Toei shot the show like with Sentai.
Yeah.
And Bandai made the toys in conjunction with the show.
Right.
So Bandai America was tasked to translate the Japanese Super Sentai toys into Mighty Morphin Power Ranger toys. Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. So the name Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Yeah.
And you texted me this morning.
Yeah.
Kind of conflicting stories
as to how that actual name came about.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the Zhu Ranger, right? That was like the more current Sentai that eventually got adapted.
So in 1992, Bioman was outdated because originally Haim Saban's idea was to adapt the Bioman series.
They shot a pilot. Mark Dacascos.
Mark Dacascos, Miguel Nunez Jr.
Yeah, Mark Dacascos, who is in Double Dragon.
Double Dragon. But that's what Saban was shopping around. But by the time Margaret Lash and Haim Saban were really gung-ho about this idea in Mighty Number Power Rangers season one episode. One of the best episodes in season
it
one.
It really is,
They were like, this is outdated. So they went with the more current Sentai show
that Japan was doing at the time. Yeah.
But there's conflicting stories on who came up with Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Yeah, the actual name. Because the documentary that I watched suggested, like, they did a lot of interviews with directors and writers and obviously cast members. And one of the writers/directors first said when they were filming the pilot, Fox Kids saw like how it was going and they immediately bought the show.
Yeah.
And so originally they were going to call it Dino Rangers, But they're like, we need a different name. We need something with a different rhythm to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they came up with Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. But the Toys That Made Us suggests that Bandai, the mm-hmm. toy company, came up with the name Mighty Morphin
yeah,
Power Rangers.
Like came up with the name, the branding,
yeah,
everything.
Exactly. So it's just conflicting, I guess, just different perspectives, conflicting reports.
Yeah, and since they were kind of in the same vein as like Bandai Japan, it seemed like they mm-hmm. were making, Bandai America was making toys in conjunction with kind of the footage they were seeing or getting.
Yeah.
But they made it seem like they had a lot of them, a lot of toys produced,
yeah.
but couldn't really release them until the show got picked up.
Yeah.
Which when they shop it around, a lot of, you know, a lot of stations thought it was silly.
Yeah.
So, and it makes sense because you want to have toys at the ready before you release something.
Yeah.
But if before the station even had, stations have a chance to create like promos for them. I don't know. Like Saban wasn't jumping in being like, no, that's not how it was done.
Yeah.
But like, so we'll just go with that.
Yeah.
You know, they had a lot of stuff already made. And, one of the things that really caught the attention of a station is Bandai America worked out a deal with whatever station picked it up, they'd get a cut of the
like royalties
of like the sales, toy sales and everything. So that was really a sweet offer for anybody. Even if the show didn't do as well as it did, you still get a little bit of a cut from the toy sales if there were any.
Yeah. And plus we mentioned Margaret Lash, like up to that point, Fox Kids, she introduced X-Men the Animated Series, uh-huh. Batman the Animated Series. A bunch of just classics. So her mm-hmm. track record, like as sort of this visionary of something that was considered a really big gamble, which is crazy to think about now, that something mm-hmm. as gigantic as Power Rangers back then, Power Rangers now is still going, I think. I don't know,
there's some iterations, at least in the last few years.
But for 30 years, they kept making Power Ranger mm-hmm. series mm-hmm. to think, like, at the time, it was a gamble. Because, again, like we said, networks were like, this is silly, this is absurd, which is so crazy that their thought process was from the brain of an adult.
Yeah.
But then they had like test groups of kids, and they loved it. One of the writers like said that his daughter was having a show and tell, and like he went or like a career day, and he took like
it's like a show and tell,
show and tell, career day,
and
he took the VHS of the first episode in there just to be like, here, you know, here's what I do, here's what we're working on. And like the whole class that was normally rambunctious was silent the whole time, just watching. Mm-hmm. And they came in the next day and knew the names of all the characters.
Yeah. Where they all wrote like thank you notes to them, and they knew all the names of the characters.
So it's so crazy, like how no one thought about, how seemingly no one thought about the impact it would have on kids or adults thinking they knew how it would impact kids without actually kids like being introduced to it.
And I think it became a phenomenon I mean, it's funny that a word like a phenomenon
mm-hmm.
is to say the very least about something. Like once the show, it hit the ground running, and pretty much since the first episode, absolutely exploded to where they couldn't produce toys fast enough.
Nope.
They couldn't restock distributors fast enough. Mm-hmm. You had things like, you know, you had action figures about the Rangers and the villains. And then one thing Margaret Lash pointed out was like these action, or maybe it was the head of Bandai America, but the action figures were using the Japanese molds, and the Japanese mm-hmm. molds, it's like these 8-inch action figures, 12-inch action figures.
They're bigger than other action
compared figures. To the Teenage Mutant Ninja mm-hmm. Turtles, which was the most popular kids show at the time.
Yeah.
They were massive. So
they're fully articulated.
Fully
so you could create your own stories mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Buckle morphers, weapons, all little other things that they would market.
Zords.
They couldn't keep in stock. And distributors immediately ran out, and almost $1 billion in sales in the first year. So that's kind of a scattered history of just the start of where Zoo Ranger, what they used for the first season, picked up. So Matt, let's just get a little more on track with what Mighty Morphin Power Rangers adapted.
And so the way that they would edit and construct an episode mm-hmm. was like nothing that had been done at the time. Mm-hmm. Like this sort of idea, when you say like Chaim Saban and Margaret Lash and Shuki Levy and all of them were visionaries, like that is the true definition of a visionary, someone who sees something that other people don't see. Mm-hmm. Like they see a grain of an idea and they see the possibilities of it. And so the whole idea of taking Japanese footage of some sort of action going on and trying to interweave it and create some sort of story, mm-hmm. they really had to get really creative and inventive with it. And they had to figure out stories to like build around the actual footage. Mm-hmm. They had to develop a new way to make a TV show, essentially. Mm-hmm. So one of the writers said that they got the Japanese footage together that they had at their disposal. They took scenes they will use.
Mm-hmm.
So like action footage, they trimmed the fat and a lot of, so anything that suggests that that action footage took place in Japan,
mm-hmm.
they would trim and cut out.
Yeah.
And then they would use blank spots like in editing. So you would have, action shot and then a blank spot for the editor that said like Kimberly teleports to the command mm-hmm. center. And then that's where they knew to film the American stuff mm-hmm. with like the teenagers and stuff. And so they would weave these tapestries that would be episodes,
mm-hmm.
which was extremely inventive and extremely creative. Understandably, it created some confusion with everyone involved, actors mm-hmm. and writers and producers and directors. Mm-hmm. Like there'd be confusion constantly because it's like, it seems like a random assortment of scenes. It's like, okay, now we're in the park and you're doing this and you're like, but I don't know what leads up to it. It's mm-hmm. like, now we're here, now we're there. And then they'd see it put together and be like, oh, that's why we did that.
Not
so
to
like
mention
that.
Shooting like four episodes a day.
Yeah, simultaneously they're releasing and shooting like four mm-hmm. episodes at a time.
Power Rangers was shown every single day.
Yeah, that's why there's so many episodes
in the
first season.
Granted, they had quite a few episodes in the can already.
Oh, sure, so they went through the first like 15 episodes of the Zhu Ranger like mm-hmm. Sentai series. Like I said, gathered as much footage as they could, cut out the little things that suggest the scene is taking place in Japan. They put them together in like these tapes
mm-hmm.
and they would hire writers to write stories around the footage mm-hmm. they put together. So they would even tie in they found a great way to tie in locations from LA that looked almost exactly like mm-hmm. locations in Japan, which mm-hmm. I think is kind of a luck thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they found a way they would see the monsters in each episode mm-hmm. and they would find a way to tie it into the theme of an episode. Mm-hmm. So like a pig that eats a bunch of garbage, you know, or like if someone's afraid of bees, they fight a giant bee, mm-hmm. you know? So it's basically taking something that existed and building around it.
Yeah.
And so really the best way to describe these are weaving of tapestries.
Yeah.
And the fact that they put something out that made sense somehow is crazy and boggles my mind that they were like the true genius of it. I don't think it's appreciated enough.
No.
Now, granted, I say that made sense. There's a lot of things that you try and explain it to someone. You're like, that doesn't make sense. They mm-hmm. were kind of, I think at one point this week when we were talking about it, they were at the mercy.
They're kind of beholden to the footage that they can
exactly.
use. Now, the thing is, too, there's a lot of... Now, I'll rewind just a little bit just to kind of establish in Japan, the Sentai shows change costumes, change actors, change stories each year.
Yep.
Now, it's a little different. Mighty Morphin Power Rangers had three seasons. So the first season, the stock footage used was from the Kaiu Ryu Sentai Zhu Ranger mm-hmm. series. So we keep saying Zhu Ranger. That's kind of the shorthand for the Kaiu Sentai Zhu Ranger.
Yep.
And then what happened is... They got 40 episodes. Fox ordered 40 episodes.
Yep.
And they weren't anticipating the success of the show. So they were running out of Zhu Ranger footage. So what they did was they tasked Toei and Rainbow Productions, who did the monster stuff, to shoot more footage for them. And it was more geared towards Mighty Morphin, the American show. Yeah. So you'd have more in the last 15 episodes that seemed it applied more to the stories established in the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and then the first 13 episodes of season 2 used the rest of that footage, and then they moved on to the Gosei Sentai series. But we'll get into that with season 2.
Yeah.
But essentially, you had to be creative. You know, and also the Zhu Ranger series happened a year before this, so they were able to get the costumes sent to them, and then after they moved on to Japan to the Gosei series, they kept the costumes in America.
Yeah.
So it also explains why sometimes Tommy's shield looks different when he's the Green Ranger. But they had to be creative back to the writers, because there was such a heavy element of mysticism with the Japanese show that definitely wouldn't make sense to a lot of American audiences, especially American children.
Yep.
So that's why some of the stuff seems a little odd. Of the stuff they have to explain around it seems odd. But you have to do the best you can with what you have, and it may seem it is hokey and it is corny.
Sure.
But however, again, we're gearing it towards children. Children really don't need a lot of logic applied to things.
Yeah.
Just, they need help over there, and the Green Ranger showed up. I'm not going to try to apply logic to the fact
how
that
did the Yellow Ranger get up there?
The Megazord was just underwater.
Yeah.
I didn't see the Megazord come up out of water, and it doesn't look like it's harmed at all. All I know is it came, and it's helping the Dragon Zord.
Yeah. At the very least, even as you get older, you can appreciate the process that went into doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And it also kind of explains some of the bad acting. A, there were a lot of inexperienced actors.
Right.
And B, the shooting schedule was so fast paced. Mm-hmm. It's not like you can stand there and you have all the time in the world to all right, do that again.
Yeah.
All right, do that again. Mm-hmm. Do this. So it didn't occur to me until I was rewatching a lot of stuff that I'm like, that might explain some of the really bad acting as well. Granted, the writing probably didn't help and the inexperience, but also it's like you get anything remotely, all right, good, let's move on. Because they're constantly pumping out episodes.
And plus, one of the biggest critiques against it from people whenever they go back and they're like, I can't believe I liked this show as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
The ADR elements when they're in their costumes.
Sure.
Here's the thing, When we say they're shooting one thing, okay, and now you have to go into the booth and ADR that episode you just shot while also shooting the next episode, to which you have to go ADR that episode.
Oh, yeah.
So stuff may seem a little stilted because, again, the writing maybe not the best, but the ADR, I think it was Amy Jo Johnson said that they pretty much had to ADR everything outside because of all the external noise.
Yeah. It was Catherine Sutherland, I think.
Catherine Sutherland.
It doesn't matter.
But you ADR all. You know, it's the same thing if you're voicing a video game, a fighting video game.
Yeah.
You have to put in all the grunts and all the little one-liners, and you have to match the expressiveness of the Japanese footage. So that's why sometimes it's like, you're not going to defeat us, Lord Zedd, and that's season 2. But it's like, you're not going to take us, Rita. You have to get the line delivery synced up with the motions and the expressiveness of the Japanese footage.
Yeah.
So that's why it seems odd, and it is.
Yeah.
But however, you can overlook that if you think, it seems really corny and cheesy because you kind of have to work with what you have.
Yeah. If you watch it now, you really have to shut your brain off and just accept that it's something that it's not going to be high art.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's something that I was having so much fun watching it because I shut my brain off and I just accepted everything that came to me as it was without trying to break it down too much. And anytime I tried to, I'd be like, you know what? I'm not going to do that. Because I'm enjoying the hell out of myself right now. This is very charming. I remember why I love this show, why I still love this show.
And it may seem, it's not really different than a lot of animes that come out.
Exactly.
Like the stuff that's adapted for American audiences, the English dubs of things. It's the same thing with animes.
Yep.
Like, of course, there are animes that are much more highly regarded because of the writing. And, you know, and like you just said, I mean, Power Rangers isn't high art, but neither are a lot of animes either. But it's enjoyable, not just for what it is, but you can appreciate what it is because of all of the work that goes into it.
Plus, the characters are so distinct,
mm-hmm.
and they went out of their way to make the characters distinct. on the plate, it's a prevailing memory that a lot of kids from our generation have, mm-hmm. is like, on the playground, which Ranger are you? Mm-hmm. I want to be Tommy. Okay, I want to be Jason. Well, I don't want to be Billy. I'll be Zach. You know, I'm Kimberly. Like, there was some relatability,
mm-hmm.
that every kid watching had to some character. And each character had a distinct personality and character trait, which is really impressive that with all this flurry of things that had to get done, they still made sure that the characters had to resonate,
mm-hmm.
with the audience. Yeah. And we need to establish these five, and then when Tommy came along, six distinct,
mm-hmm.
teenagers,
yeah.
that came together as a team to save the world,
yeah.
essentially. And it made it relatable for kids watching.
Yeah, and it wasn't making a point to meet some sort of diversity quota.
Yeah.
It just so happened it was a relatively diverse cast. I know three quarters of the group are white.
Yeah.
But you still had everybody playing, unless you want to think nerd is a minority.
Yeah, but, it is. But, well, not anymore.
No. But everybody, like you just said, they played a role. You could decipher who was who.
Yep.
And everybody played a role in the importance and success of the team.
Yep.
It just wasn't Jason carrying the load. It just wasn't Zach and Jason and Tommy getting all the spotlight.
Yep.
Both in costume and out of costume, each character played a role in saving the team and helping the team thrive. Billy from, you know, not just because David Yost is an amazing gymnast and is actually a really, you know, relatively comparable martial artist in regard to that.
Because that was the thing when they were casting. Yeah. It's like you either have to have a dance background, mm-hmm. a gymnastics background, or a martial arts background.
Yeah.
And several of them had a mixture of, especially Walter Jones.
Yeah. And Billy, though, in so many episodes, because out of the 60 episodes, I think we might have watched half of them.
Yeah.
Like, which is still kind of
exaggeration.
Yeah, we watched like half of them. Maybe even a little more than half. All I know is I watched over 30 episodes of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers than last week.
And had a blast.
Had a freaking blast. But I noticed just how important Billy was. It's always Billy, what can we do here?
Yeah.
Billy, what can we, like, as far as like the science and the technology.
That was kind of the joke, was he was always the weak link. But if you watch the show, it's like Billy is so important to, mm-hmm. this team.
Yeah. And then you have Trini, who connects with Billy and how she can translate to everybody else his scientific jargon.
Yeah.
But then also,
she's got like a peaceful energy to her.
Yeah. And then Jason, although, you know, he seems like he'd be kind of a brute and a douchebag and like really demanding, mm-hmm. and commanding. Great leader.
Excellent leader.
Sacrifices himself. Zach.
The most important thing to him is making sure everyone is taken care of, mm-hmm. and that people are safe.
Yeah.
And like he beats himself up over, mm-hmm. not being able to execute a certain agenda or mission or something like that. Or if he's ever has to like pull out of a difficult situation, mm-hmm. he's like, I couldn't save him. You know, something like
embodies a leader.
Yeah, exactly.
And then of course Zach, he's the life of the party. He's jovial. He's hip. He's cool. He's my favorite Ranger.
I love. He's so great.
In the first season, Zach's Black Ranger is my favorite Ranger. But he also can take on the role of a leader. He is a tried and true second in command, mm-hmm. to Jason. Even when the Green Ranger shows up, Zach is still second in command. Jason is still the leader.
Yep.
And he embodies that. Yeah. He can be serious when he needs to be. He can look out for the others when he needs to.
Yeah.
Even Kim, who is presented as like
preppy, you know, and girly.
Exactly. She can get down to business. Yeah. She looks out for others. She plays such a great role. She matures. That's the thing, is all the teenagers with attitude that, you know, Alpha 5 scoffed at. The Zordon was like, you know, we have to do it because they're the future and we need
them
to
grow into their roles.
They grow
as Power Rangers.
They mature.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, the first 15 or so episodes, you know, you have, you know, Power Rangers in an episodic sense. Each day they face the villain of the day. I can't even say the villain of the week. The villain of the day.
It's very self-contained.
They deal with the Balkan Skull, which I must say, rewatching this,
Balkan Skull are great.
Jason Narvi and Paul Schreier are the standouts.
They are the best actors,
mm-hmm.
And I know it's like, oh, well, the best actors of Power Rangers. Yeah. No, they're like legitimately
Amy
good.
Amy Jo Johnson's good too.
She is too. The casting director saw her she was just coming back from like an acting class because she went to acting school. Yeah. And she's like, you should try out for this.
Yeah.
And she knew she had a gymnastics background. And so she did. And it won her the role. Yeah. Amy Jo Johnson's good. Walter Jones
is great.
Now those characters, those actors have moments of like, ugh, like you roll your eyes and this is really corny. Mm-hmm. But you can tell they're clearly the ones who have some sort of acting background.
Oh, yeah. But Jason Narvi and Paul Schreier are the standouts.
Bulk and Skull, the bullies, they're usually the comic relief. Mm-hmm.
They get bested at the end of every episode. The Rangers never put their hands on them.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And we'll get into like kind of how they represent martial arts and quickly talk about how parents groups especially saw the Power Rangers. But
that's the other, sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
But it's, you know, the team has to mature when they face their greatest threat when Rita just can't top them in those first 15, 16 episodes. She introduces her own ranger,
yes,
the Green Ranger, who Green with Evil is probably the best arc in Power Rangers. I guess minus maybe the White Light.
In terms of generating emotion and feeling like the Power Rangers at the end of their rope, excellent storytelling.
Yeah.
Really, really good. Mm-hmm. And I have some of the key story arcs in here.
Yeah.
But I do want to say when I was rewatching this season, there were a lot of things like I would see in early episodes and then in later episodes, and I will sit there and I'd be like, why didn't you just do that then? Or why is this coming up now? Like there is, but I have to remember that the first season, especially the majority of it, like a huge chunk of it, were self-contained episodes.
Yeah.
It was literally like one of the teens is doing something, some goody two shoes thing. Rita and Fenster create like the threat of the week. Babu and Squat act like dipshits. Goldar is a badass, but at the end of the day, the Rangers will make him look silly. Mm-hmm. The teens go out and about. They're attacked by putties. They beat up the putties. The putties are like Rita's henchmen.
Yeah.
They say it's morphin time. They fight. The monster's bested, so Rita makes them grow. They have to channel their Zords, which are their giant robots that they use to fight the monsters. They're unsuccessful. They form the Megazord, and then victory, and then there's victory. They probably say more phenomenal at one point, which they tried to get to catch on. And then usually some character who was introduced at the beginning of the episode comes back around. There's something silly that happens. Usually there's like Principal Kaplan, who's a principal character who wears a toupee.
Miss Appleby.
Like Miss Appleby. Usually they'll come back around, and there's some event that makes Bulk and Skull look silly.
Yeah.
Like they slip and fall, or they get hit with food, like there's a food fight, or there's some sort of slapstick that goes on, and then the like end credits, and that was the formula for most episodes. And so when you find something that has some sort of continuity error, you have to remember that each episode was self-contained.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much it's like a cartoon,
like
The Simpsons or something.
Mm-hmm.
You can pretty much just most of the time make your own rules, or if you introduce a character that you never see again, that's totally fine.
Yeah. And when you talk the multi-part episodes, they really did a good job, because we watched all the multi-part episodes.
Yeah, that was kind of the rule, was like watch like a handful of the singular episodes, but really pay attention to the multi-part episodes.
Yeah, and they really, it seemed like they were like series checkpoints.
Yeah.
So where this had, you know, Green with Evil happened. Now after that, after Tommy joins the team, now stories will surround Tommy as well, which is a funny story because they're, one of the producers of the show was like, the writers were going through footage, like the Zhu Ranger footage, like we got the first 15 episodes in the can. Then all of a sudden, this sixth Ranger shows up.
There's another Ranger.
Like, who's this?
And then they're like, then we watched more episodes after that, and we're like, oh, he sticks around for a while.
This isn't a one-off. So they started writing around him, and then a lot of the first season was the big conflict or secondary conflict was around how do we help preserve the Green Ranger power and all these things, and then kind of surround stories around that. So it's kind of these checkpoints, these multi-part episodes were checkpoints to where the rest of the series would take off from. So like Green with Evil and everything with Green Ranger with other stories, and then maybe not Island of Illusion, but it helped bring growth. But something like, Green Candle, Doomsday, Part 1 and 2.
Return of an Old Friend,
Parts 1 and 2. You know, all these things help kind of mature the characters, mature the story, and really present like, oh, yeah, well, the Rangers are really in for it now, yeah, and they start, yeah, utilizing these different sources or their these different aspects of their power.
And even within the self-contained aspect, I would sit and I would go throughout the entire first season and I'd get deeper and deeper and I'm like, oh, shit, there's character growth here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can tell, like, I could palpably tell that they were maturing and they were embracing their roles and they were getting stronger as a team and stuff, mm-hmm, like that, which I don't think a lot of people give a lot of credit to.
No, they, like, they, yeah, don't.
There wasn't any crazy detailed level of storytelling that, mm-hmm, constantly tune in next week to see, you know, every episode ended with, yeah, Power Rangers are victorious, mm-hmm, which made the multi-part episodes mean that much more because, mm-hmm, they're telling a story that put the Power Rangers in legit danger, that, mm-hmm, if you're a kid watching, you're like, I don't think they're going to make it back from, mm-hmm, this.
Yeah.
There was actual character growth.
Mm-hmm.
And we mentioned a lot of the distinct personalities of the character and stuff like that. Every character is the centerpiece of, like, every character gets their own episode.
Yeah.
Like, at the center of it.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's like, oh, Zach's struggling with confidence, or Trini's cousin gets kidnapped, or, mm-hmm, Billy has this test that he failed, and now, you know, and yeah, it's pretty, you know, surface level, mm-hmm, but still, like, the focus on those characters, that it's not like every episode, you know, has Jason as the vocal point, mm-hmm, or Kimberly,
yeah,
or Tommy and stuff like that. So I credit them with that, yeah, as well.
I think I just discredited Island of Illusion as far as, like, I think I mentioned there's growth there. I think jumping off from what you just said, up to that point before the Island of Illusion parts 1 and 2, each member of the team had an episode surrounded around a conflict,
yeah,
that they were dealing with. Island of Illusion brings all that back up, mm-hmm, and kind of hits on it in a way to make heavy topics, something like imposter syndrome,
yeah,
or certain fears, digestible for kids.
Yeah.
To where, like, the Island of Illusion, there, it's this other dimension to, mm-hmm, where they have to deal with,
yeah,
these fears or else they'll disappear.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I guess that is that checkpoint's importance, oh, yeah, in the growth and of the characters.
There's the relatability because the teens aren't perfect.
It's, no,
like, you know, they'll have stories surrounding bad days, mm-hmm, insecurity, imposter syndrome, lack of self-confidence. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's done in a way that's digestible for, yeah, kids, and it's easily resolved. It's kind of surface level, but kids don't need deep explorations into those sorts of things. Not at that age, at least.
No.
They can at least be introduced to those ideas and see how the Power Rangers made it through.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be like, if they can do it, I can do it. Like, yeah, these are my role models, and they're saying that I'm strong enough to do this just like them. They just need to see them being relatable, see them overcome the odds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on one episode, they approach Kimberly's parents are divorced,
mm-hmm,
and they don't dive too deep into that. At the end of the episode, it's, mm-hmm, all hunky-dory, but still introducing that idea into a kid's show.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, let's talk a little bit about the reception, because obviously, yeah, it's a show that uses a lot of martial arts and,
yeah,
violence.
Yeah.
And the reception, kids loved it. However,
of course,
a lot of parents and a lot of detractors pointed out the violence of the show.
Yeah.
Now, there were things that the censors at the beginning told the show, like, you can't have people, you know, you can't do headshots, you can't show any, like, mortal danger, you can't,
yeah,
do all these, like, it's kind of like in the Spider-Man TV show, to where, like, you can't show anybody shooting bullets, that has to be,
yeah,
like lasers,
so
or
lasers,
something.
Yeah.
Or I guess Batman, the animated series,
yeah,
pretty much any superhero cartoon.
Yeah.
So you have to do all these things, but it still came under fire from parents groups, from news stations, just talking about the poor influence it had on,
yeah,
kids. But the thing they're not seeing is, yes, there's a lot of martial arts done in there. These may be the same parents that let their kids watch The Three Ninjas.
Yeah.
There's maybe not as much hijinks. It's maybe not as cartoony.
Yeah.
But what you're not seeing is, so many times, Jason, Zach, Tommy, Trini, anytime they're teaching martial arts to someone, they're teaching the virtues of it. This,
yep,
is self-defense. You know, the credo for a lot of the Rangers are, you know, of course, you don't show your, you know, you don't show your identity, but also don't escalate a battle unless your hand is forced.
Yep.
You know, this is self-defense. Don't use your power against anybody.
Yeah.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah. Spider-Man.
Like, yeah, exactly. Back to Spider-Man. And not to mention when the teens are teaching karate, they're teaching about discipline,
yeah.
teaching about determination, believing in yourself. Mm-hmm. It's a self-defense. Don't use it against somebody. Don't pick on people.
Yep.
Don't, like, none of that stuff. They're giving all these virtuous ideals that children should ascribe to, but all parents are seeing are the violence. So whether or not their Fox Kids made a lot of PSAs
yeah.
with the Rangers, and whether or not it was a response to this or they already had done this and parents still weren't watching it, there were a number of PSAs that talked about teamwork,
yep.
meeting conflict with the least amount of force. I had mentioned earlier, whenever Bulk and Skull end up having something blow up in their face, the Rangers aren't putting their hands on them. The Rangers yeah. aren't kicking them in the face. The Rangers aren't kicking them in the butt. Bulk and Skull are like maybe charging Zach, and Zach yeah. just moves out of the way and they run into something.
Yeah.
But
Or dances out of the way.
Hip Hop Keto is badass.
There was an episode to where the focal point was Zach not having confidence in his abilities to win the Angel Grove dance contest. I was like, Zach, you're the best motherfucking dancer in Angel Grove. You are in such command of dancing and martial arts. You created your own martial arts.
Now,
Jason David Frank in an interview
yeah.
Would be like, yeah, and he created Hip Hop Keto, which is essentially capoeta, but like it was he had yeah. his own spin on it.
Everybody
I was like, Zach, yeah. come on, you're the best dancer in Angel
Grove. Everybody had their own distinct martial arts style as well.
Yeah.
So like the PSAs, you know, meeting conflict with the least amount of force, talking problems out, respecting people's differences, eating yeah. healthy, going to school, staying away from drugs, believing in yourself, not listening to intrusive thoughts,
yeah.
positive self-talk. Don't try this stuff at home was yeah. one of the PSAs.
Listen, we're doing all we can yeah. to appease you people. We're yeah. telling the kids not to try it at yeah. home. Maybe you should do something about
There's
that.
A really good one with Amy Jo Johnson and David Yost where they say weapons and fighting on the show are fantasy.
Yeah.
In reality, weapons and fighting hurt people. And also showed behind the scenes of like how certain aspects were filmed,
yeah.
like don't be afraid. This didn't happen to this person. Here's how we did it.
Yeah,
blah blah blah. Kind of a peek behind yeah. the curtain, ways to help apply to kids that this is a, for lack of a better term, a safe show for your kids to watch.
Yeah,
but like with anything, parents groups sink their teeth into something like that, and they only see the negative.
Yeah,
and sometimes the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Yeah.
So they're going to start catering and pandering to the parents groups. So yep. like that's like, we can't do this, can't do that, blah, blah, yeah. blah. But it didn't stop the runaway train that Mighty Morphin Power Rangers was.
No, exactly. I mean, exciting fights, cartoonish villains, vibrant colors, moments of humor, positive influences, good guy always prevails. The moments of tension are brief. Rarely are they too intense. They kind of reserve that for the multi-part episodes. It was a perfect formula for a kid show. I think we'd be remiss if we didn't at least talk about some of the notable monsters of season one and some of the notable story arcs.
What are some of the stories and monsters?
So to the listener, we've spent a lot of time mm-hmm. kind of laying the groundwork.
Yeah.
As we're going through, I'm like, maybe we should have had an episode just laying the groundwork and then we could go into season one. But it is what it is.
It's all right.
Yeah.
Let's keep going.
Yeah, exactly.
We won't spend too long on it.
No, you have an understanding of the history of it, its impact, the importance of it,
mm-hmm.
really. And the actual season, if not for the progression of it and the different story arcs and the monsters to prove that it'd be successful, we wouldn't be talking about it right now. So I just have some of the notable season one monsters.
Yeah.
A lot of them are mm-hmm. characters who obviously a lot of Japanese footage.
Mm-hmm.
They seem a little silly,
mm-hmm.
but that contributes to the charm of it, I think. I have Spider-Tron from Itsy Bitsy Spider episode. Mm. It's just a giant tarantula. Polluticorn from the cleanup club, which is just a giant silver unicorn.
Polluticorn.
Slippery Shark from On Fins and Needles. Giant shark.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Woe.
who's one of the more eerie looking ones. She's like an elemental like water fairy monster. She was from Peace, Love, and Woe, voiced by Alex Borstein.
Oh, really?
Who would go on to Mad TV.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Lois on Family Guy. Mm-hmm. She's in The Marvelous Miss Maple.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
King Sphinx.
King Sphinx is one of the more popular
Some
ones.
Of the coolest looking creatures on this show, like Goldar, who's one of Rita's main like soldiers, who's constantly trying to go down and prove that he can take out the Rangers. He's a big part of a lot of the big story arcs.
He's the only one of her lackeys who can really best the Rangers.
Really translates really well to toys, like a King Sphinx. He was designed specifically to destroy Jason. King Sphinx, one of the most popular monsters ever in Power Rangers, just because he looks so cool. He's from the episode Oppressing Engagement. A lot of these were featured in other episodes and flashbacks. The Mighty Minotaur from Teamwork.
Yeah.
Commander Crayfish from Mighty Morphin Mutants.
Oh, yeah.
Who has one of the worst fights with a Zord, in which basically a lot of the monsters will just grow into larger versions of themselves. And in this particular episode, they created like evil power coins. So there will be like evil, like mutant versions of the Rangers. And essentially his fight against the Zords was... he just sat on the shoulders of the other the enlarged mutant rangers. And so you're just like, this renders you so immobile. This is so inefficient. It was just silly.
Yeah.
So Commander Crayfish, just a large sea character, the Nasty Knight from Happy Birthday, Zach. And then I wish there was a video element to this, because some of these look so... Nasty Knight looks so cool.
Oh, yeah.
And so... but a quick Google search will help you out with
exactly.
that. Twin Man.
Twin Man, voiced by Bryan Cranston.
Yeah, I was going to say, Bryan Cranston.
And the Snizzard as well.
Yeah. And then the Cyclops, who's in the Green Candle episode.
Is it the Cyclops or Cyclopsis?
Cyclopsis was Goldar's Zord.
Yeah. That's right, from Doomsday, parts 1 and 2.
Yeah, Cyclops was a shape-shifting Cyclops who could basically change into... There was a lot of shape-shifting going on to kind of try and throw the Rangers off. Pudgy Pig.
That's right.
Yeah. He's probably
one of the more popular ones.
Yeah, from Food Fight. Pumpkin Rapper from Trick or Treat.
Ah, yes.
So some of the notable monsters from
Season 1.
Season 1. Yeah. I don't know why I lost my train of thought.
I don't know.
But some of the key story arcs.
Key story.
Season 1. Green with Evil.
Green with Evil is still, it's for not, a, I don't, it's for, a, I keep wanting to add these superlatives to it, but I feel like I'd be discrediting, it's great storytelling.
Oh, yeah. And it's a 5-part story
to keep
arc.
It going.
Yeah.
And to make every part kind of distinct in its own way.
Your introduction to Tommy, he's the new kid in town.
The payoff is still so cool.
So great. He equals Jason in fighting ability because he's so, like, he's so new and so prone and so vulnerable. Rita chooses, and he's a great fighter, chooses him to be her Green Ranger. She's like, the only way I'm going to destroy these Rangers is with one of their own.
Yeah.
And he's... super powerful,
yeah,
and he's evil, super evil, and then they eventually, over a 5-part stretch, that he eventually becomes good, and
that's a start in him becoming the most popular character,
a turning point really for the show,
because
now at that point the motor is running, and Jason David Frank had just an undeniable charm. All the girls watching, like, he was a very attractive guy. Finally gets some sort, like, maybe we'll have a little romance with him and Kimberly.
Yeah.
So it kind of turned the corner on that one and really established itself after that in popularity.
Yeah, for sure.
Island of Illusion,
which
is kind of about Rangers overcoming their own fears. Rita transports them out of Angel Grove onto the Island of Illusion. And then what was the little person's name, the character?
Oh, it's Quagmire.
Quagmire, giggity giggity. aided by Quagmire with riddles and stuff to help them overcome their fears.
Yeah.
And he helps them because Rita banished him to that island, and he wants to help them destroy Rita. And so a lot about overcoming fears. We get a great payoff in that one. Green Candle, which Rita, like...
creates a green candle mm-hmm. that once it burns out, the Green Ranger yeah. loses his powers.
It's the start of the effort to start taking the power away from the Green Ranger mm-hmm. because, as you'll talk about with Doomsday yeah. parts 1 and 2 were supposed to be the series finale.
Yeah.
So they were working to really just take away the Green Ranger's power and to end the show. But yeah. again, the unforeseen popularity, like we mentioned earlier, caused them to have to scramble
because yeah.
they're running out of Zhu Ranger footage. So that's when they reached out to Toei
oh, yeah.
and Rainbow Productions to
oh, yeah.
create more footage.
Yeah. And at this point, you're getting, or not at this point, it was later, but kind of a, and by that point, the Green Ranger was insanely popular. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I can't imagine as a kid watching this, you're like, wait, what? No, no. Yeah. They're taking the Green Ranger away?
Also, the Dragon Zord.
Yeah, and the Dragon Zord was cool, and the Green Ranger had the Dragon Dagger.
Mm-hmm. And I know the meme to where people, like, they show, like, how did this guy get any sound out of there yeah. where he's holding it up to
his
to his helmet? It's like, listen, again, kids don't apply
matter.
That logic.
It's cool.
Yeah.
It looks cool. Shut your brain off. Who cares?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, who cares?
Yeah. It's funny to point that stuff out.
Sure.
But it's still, let's just remember the audience and let's remember
yeah.
what they had to do.
Yeah, but you get you're gearing towards the end of the Green Ranger.
Yeah.
And he had at that point become a legit important part of mm-hmm. the team.
Yeah.
And just showing leadership qualities. Mm-hmm. He's an aggressive fighter. Jason David Frank, a legit badass martial artist. Mm-hmm. And I say aggressive. We just got done talking about how they
yeah.
didn't he's very
his fighting has a little more gusto to it.
Yeah, it's got a bit more go with the gusto, the Green mm-hmm. Ranger gusto.
Mm-hmm.
He had his own theme song.
Yeah.
Which
I can't believe we didn't bring up Ron Wasserman.
The theme song. The theme song to Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. And I know the word iconic gets thrown around so much mm-hmm. on social media. It is one of the most iconic theme songs mm-hmm. to any TV show
yep.
ever. It will stay in your head.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard this song so many times throughout my mm-hmm. life, and it's still, whenever I hear it, whenever they morph and it starts playing, or the intro to the show, mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, here we go.
The genius Ron Wasserman.
It gets you so pumped up.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote music. He also wrote the X-Men animated series
yeah.
theme. It gets you so pumped up. And he wrote a lot of the music that plays during the fights mm-hmm. and stuff, like
Combat,
Green Ranger,
Fight.
154.
Yeah.
541.
541, yeah, which I feel like is his chord progression for that song.
Probably.
541.
Actually, that's a good, yeah.
Tick tock, tick.
You're running
combat.
Out of time.
Combat.
Go Green Ranger.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's awesome.
Ah, it's so good.
But
plus the fight scenes are
the fight scenes are
shot really well, both in costume and out of costume. So many times I texted Matt being like, combination of Kim, Zach, and Jason, underrated badass combo,
yes.
or Billy and Trini, badass fight, just the way it was shot.
Zach and Tommy, mm-hmm. Zach gets to morph.
That's the other thing is Jason usually morphs.
Yeah.
It's an extra special thing when one of the other Rangers gets
to morph, or somebody's wearing the dragon shield.
Yeah.
To preserve the green power, they can give it to somebody else. So
yeah,
Jason will wear it. Zach wore it
yep.
in the season finale. And that's the only time.
And the kind of, and that's a good segue out of the green with or the green candle episode mm-hmm. is he eventually loses his power,
mm-hmm.
but in Doomsday, Rita comes down to Earth. She puts the threat level at its highest it's ever been. Her castle gets put down there. She unleashes three threats: Lokar, Cyclopsis,
mm-hmm.
which is
Goldar's
Zord,
mm-hmm.
and herself.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rangers are like you said, Doomsday was supposed to be the series finale.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it.
Yeah.
Like the threat levels are the highest they've ever been
mm-hmm.
in this season.
Yeah.
And even sitting there knowing they'd get out of it, like I'm putting myself back then as a kid watching it, and you're
mm-hmm.
like, I don't know. This is the end of the Power Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they're going to get out of this. And so they are Doomsday. They don't bring Tommy back.
Return
Tommy
of
shows
an old,
up.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in Doomsday, they make their way out of it.
You see, they reference Tommy here and there. Because after Green Candle, you don't see Tommy for a long time. They even take him out of the credits.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
At least for a few episodes. Because, again, these were on daily. So it could have been just last week you didn't see him.
And so they reference Tommy a lot. And they're like, I wonder where Tommy is. They're like, I wonder if Tommy's going to show up. I wonder how Tommy did in the karate tournament. And that kind of thing. At the end of Doomsday, they're honoring the Power Rangers, and after they've conquered the threat, the kids are like, I think the Red Ranger is the coolest. I think the Blue Ranger is the coolest. No, the Yellow Ranger. And then Tommy comes in the frame. He's like, you know what? I think they're all great.
Yeah.
Or something.
I know the Power Rangers, and they're all pretty great.
You want to talk about the ultimate team player is Tommy.
Yeah.
Because that dude arguably is the best fighter out of all of them, has so much leadership potential. And the selfless act, he didn't like mope around. He didn't get to be in the Power Rangers anymore. He still stood on the sidelines and cheered them on. And even when he got reintroduced as the Green Ranger in Return of an Old Friend, it was on limited power. He couldn't go out to every mission. And every time he was on a mission, they're like, Tommy, you need to conserve your power and stuff like that. Because they reinstated it by in Return of an Old Friend, the Rita captured the Ranger's parents.
Yeah.
And she's like, if you want your parents back, give me your power coins. And they still had the green power coin, and they still had it at the command center. And they gave them all their power coins. So they used some of Zordon's power, transferred it into the green power coin. But it was only on a limited basis. So this guy, for as badass as he is, could conceivably be the leader of the Power Rangers, which as the White Ranger, he took a step back and was like, I'm like, whatever helps the Rangers. Like if I'm running low on power, do I want to be out there with you guys? Yes. But I will humble myself and like not put you guys in any more danger going out there and losing all my power. And then I'm useless.
Yeah.
So just in that and how he started off as legit powerful Green Ranger, had his powers taken, and then powers given back in a limited capacity, and had to essentially like be on call a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And he didn't get to contribute to a lot of the big wins and stuff, but he still took it in stride and was like, the important thing is that the Power Rangers saved the day and my friends are still here and everyone is safe, which made him the most deserving to get something super powerful like the White Ranger. And so Doomsday and then Doomsday feels like a series finale, and then Return of an Old Friend was just nice to see Tommy as the Green Ranger again.
Yeah.
And those multiple part episodes, like I said, are sprinkled throughout just self-contained episodes, making them feel more important.
Yeah.
That they have a continual storyline running through a couple episodes.
Yeah.
And it's going to take off in season two.
Oh,
there's
going to
be three part episodes. I've already started season two. The season premiere aired in primetime. We'll get more into this when we talk season two, but it starts off with a three-part episode. It's going to carry more of the Green Ranger story in there, evolve into the White Ranger as they start using the Ghost Eye footage. And also with season two, they're going to double down on a lot of stuff, mainly all the stuff they release and put out.
At
the beginning of, in season two, they're going to start a live tour, but some of what this season yielded as far as like marketing goes. So of course you have the toys, you have all these different things, but one of them was a physical representation of the culmination of this 6-month earth-shaking groundswell of popularity. And that was a stage show in February 1994. So again, at this point, the show had been on for 6 months.
Yeah.
And it was at Universal Studios.
Just continuing to build steam.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was, it could not be stopped. And this stage show they were going to do was going to be kind of part, you know, martial arts displays and the part, you know, Q&A. And it was started in a small theater, and they were like, there's too many people.
Did you say it was at Universal Studios?
Yeah, Universal Studios. There's too many people who want into the show. So they moved to an amphitheater. They still had to turn away thousands of people.
Yeah.
And it caused a like 10-mile backup on the freeway, especially leading into Universal Studios.
Because Highway Patrol shut off so many off-ramps to get to the park.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
just a massive traffic jam.
Yeah, and it started this, you know, that show in February started this marketing tour to where they became Teen Dare ambassadors.
Yeah.
They would go to these big gatherings and they would do autographs, answer questions, do all these certain things. So it wasn't necessarily like a live show like that would happen at the beginning of season two or as an actual show with a story. Yeah. But they became the number one show in October and November 1993, sweeps, demolishing the network competition, changed several time slots, and continued to dominate. Number one show in the 2 to 11 demographic, 60 licensees, hundreds of products, named Teen Ambassadors of Dare. And even before the second season, a movie was announced that would come out. It said the spring in 1995. Yeah. It came out the summer of 1995. Character appearances on radio promotions, Fox on-air campaigns, sponsorships, the first Mighty Tour, which was just... you know, taking these public appearances at these in these various states, and then the toys, action figures of different varieties, mac and cheese, canned pastas, Disney adventures, granola bars.
Some of the imagery from that time period, like you see it and you get this warm pang when you get nostalgic about something, and it almost feels like it works its way up into your nose. I don't know, like, makes it all tingly and stuff.
It feels tingly, kind of makes me emotional. Like, there were several moments to where I still was so endeared and enchanted by the show that, you know, it's just gonna get even bigger in season two. So to kind of put a bow on this episode, we talked a while, gave a little background, gave a little our thoughts on the first season.
We'll do a bit more seeing how we feel in 2024, kicked around the idea of, like, as we were watching, we're like, I have so much to say about this episode alone, even if it's just riffing on it. Like, maybe next year do, like, just an episode by episode podcast.
I'd like to hear all of your thoughts there. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode. We are so excited to continue Mighty Morphin May.
A lot of groundwork delay, especially at the beginning of the episode.
All I can say is, I'm still that little kid who wants everything Power Rangers.
Yeah.
He can get his hands on. Yeah. Watching this, I was just, after every episode, I was like, I want to know these teens. I want to be a part of the Rangers. I want to be a part of this group, a part of this world. We started watching really when season two was nearing the end, and season three when the movie came out.
But it played, but of course, Fox Kids.
Yeah.
And played reruns.
And I know we could have gone more with behind the scenes stuff. We will in season two because it's context for a huge shift in the behind the scenes stuff, a shift in the show. We'll talk more about that in season two. But we just want to lay the groundwork here. And like we kind of sprinkled throughout this episode, rewatching this and watching stuff about it reminded me how much I loved this show.
Through all of its flaws and foibles, I still love this show.
I still love Power Rangers. Yeah. Hopefully, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Hopefully, it came through in this first week of Mighty Morphin May. Thank you all for listening. I'm excited. Yeah. I'm really excited to carry on. Again, we've already started with our season two prep, or our prep for the season two episode. Season three, it's just some stuff I'm not looking forward to because I know how emotional
some of it
will be, considering that we've been watching this. I mean, it's not just when you're just watching spotty episodes in syndication. Now we're watching it kind of as it goes on, and I'm like, God, I'm not looking forward to watching that episode. Yeah. And then when it ends, you know, kind of ends on a kind of a low note. We'll get into that with season three. But this was week one, our season one retrospective of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. I hope you all enjoyed it. Thank you all for listening. And as always, as we feel the Rangers would want us to convey,
I was just about to say, be good to yourselves, be good to each other, because why would you want to be rude when you can be rad? We'll see you next time. Go, go, Power!